So one of our highly anticipated parts of the clinic is the coaches panel discussion. We have a wide variety of coaches amongst different classifications, and we can't thank them all. Can't wait to hear them all. Without further ado, I invite the coaches on the panel to introduce themselves briefly, and we'll share a glimpse of their backgrounds to the audience. How this thing will go is basically, I don't want it to be as formal, turn into like me just asking them a question and they respond. I'll walk around if it's an open discussion, if you guys have any questions regarding how their program is, whether it's program development, X's and O's, anything related that you would like to ask. We do ask that you guys do hopefully take the mic because we are recording this session for the radio to hear as well. So with that being said, Coach Craig Steele.
My name is I just want to make sure everybody could hear me. My name is Craig Steele. I grew up in Sydney, Texas, playing six-man football. My first job was at Santa Ana High School. I was an assistant there for 2 years, and then I got the head coaching job at May. And I spent the last 20 years at May, 20 great years. And then 2 weeks ago, I moved to Borden County and took the head football coaching job at Borden County. So that's why I'm dressed like I am.
Very sharply, I may add. Coach Steele, we're talking about how we all got here. Coach Keeler and I, our defense coordinator, drove in. You know, Coach lives here. Coach probably drove and walked. And Coach Steele had the charter jet from Borden County fly him in. You know, West Texas guys. My name is Eddie Gallegos, Jonesboro High School. Grew up in Strawn, Texas. Went to University of Texas for 2 years, Hookem. I know there's some Aggies in here. Anyway, finished at the University of Houston down the road. I've been in Jonesboro, I guess, for 18 years, I think, maybe 17. So that was my first job. Started as an assistant. Probably handed the reins a little too early. So I had some growing pains, but a lot of support there in that community and great kids. And there I am still, haven't run me out of town yet.
Adrian Adams, before I get started into it, first I wanted to give a props to Coach Powell and Coach Sines. This is their deal. They brought this to me and said, oh, we want to do a clinic. I said, well, why don't you do it at Allen Academy? You can save yourself some money. But they went to the DFW clinic back in the winter and said, you know, I think we can do one for six men. So give them a round of applause for organizing all this. I said, I'm just the consultant to help them along the way, to guide them. But I started my journey in football, playing football in Lufkin High School for John Outlaw. And then from there, I went to college and actually played baseball at Prairie View A&M. And at the conclusion of my career there, I went to Apple Springs to coach baseball and football. They were transitioning from 11-man to 6-man. And Cody Morey, who hired me, when he hired me, he said, you're the defensive coordinator. And I'd never seen a 6-man football game before. Until I went to go scout a scrimmage. So I got my start there for 3 years, enjoyed that. Coach Morey will be here tomorrow, I think. And then from there, I actually went to a 5A school in Houston where I was a baseball coach, and I took a year off from coaching football until my wife and I found out we were having our own child. And I was like, well, diapers and formula is kind of expensive, so maybe I'll get back into football. And Emory Wiener was looking for a six-man coach, so I applied and got the job there, and I was there for 9 years, nine really great years there before I decided to make the move to Allen Academy to be the athletic director and head football coach. So that's a little bit about my journey and how I got here today.
My name is Brent Goldman. I got into coaching accidentally. I had a gym locally that I'm in Bastrop, Texas, which was smaller before Elon Musk came around and ruined it all for everybody. I had a number of small gyms, and I got the gyms because they were going to close them down, and so the only thing I could do was buy it out and convince my buddies to still keep paying money. And in the process of doing that, a local football coach who started a program called Bastrop Tribe, he was in his first few years, said, hey, I heard you had done some coaching in public school. And I said, yeah, but it was middle school. It was, on the side. And he said, come on out. And started coaching out at Bastrop for, it was about 12, 13 years ago, and took over the program as a varsity head coach, 8 or 9 years ago. And then a couple of years ago, this will be my second season coming up, moved over to Grace Academy in Georgetown, and starting their six-man program from the ground up. That's pretty much my – and then six-man is I grew up, I should say, in part of West Texas. These guys would say it's not West Texas, but Brady, San Angelo, the eastern part of West Texas. And they're going to differ. They're going to say that's not West Texas. And I grew up watching a lot of six-man football. Never got the opportunity to play it, but I've always had a passion for it.
So I'm going to open up with the first question. Is I think what's important here is why do you coach? How do you continue to find that drive in the coaching profession? We'll start with Coach Craig Steele and work our way over to Coach Gallman.
I'm going to get the first question every time because this is really difficult. So I guess the reasons I coach, one of them is I have a passion for the game, not just the X's and O's part, but what kids get out of it, the hard parts of it. I think it makes them better people. And I think that's our job as educators is to make these young men and women that we coach and teach responsible husbands and fathers and mothers and wives. I think that's the most important thing above wins and losses. That's the most important thing. And that's really where my drive comes from and my passion comes from, that and the fact that I'm 6.5 years away from retirement. That's pretty important as well. But for real, above all, it is about the kids and about seeing them succeed. And again, it's not about wins and losses necessarily. It's about a 110-pound kid as a freshman that ends up as a 155-pound kid as a senior that can actually help you do something. And that growth for that kid, that's my favorite part of it. Whether he turns into a superstar or not doesn't really matter. It's that he stuck with it, and he didn't quit, and that he turns himself into something, because that's what we want our kids to do after they graduate, is we want them to turn themselves into something. And so that's the part I like about it.
I think Coach Steele had quite a few of the reasons that I can relate to as well. Coach Pryor mentioned community, for the kids, but myself as well. You know, this is a fellowship that we all embrace, hopefully you get as much out of it as I have in the short time I've been doing it. Coach Pryor also knows Kent Scott. He kind of got drawn back into coaching, of all places, back at a little 1A school in Central Texas. He can probably tell you more, and he's told us some stories too, Coach. So probably not for the mic though. He talked about enjoying going to work, like Craig said, some of the things he said, but like Coach Keeler, our defense coordinator, Kent Scott, and some of the other guys that at work, it's fun. That motivates me to get up in the morning. We enjoy it. We have fun, and we work hard. And again, setting a good example for the kids that you come across. Some of them need you, and some of them need you more. And so that's a motivator for me, is to set a good example, how you treat people, how hard you work, and all those other things that they see through action, not just talk. That's some of the things that for me that motivate me every day and throughout the year and throughout the seasons.
I think this upcoming season will be my 20th year in the educational coaching aspect in the school setting. Kind of got my start coaching wise as a grad assistant at Prairie View with baseball. But thinking back, kind of like I talked about playing football at Lufkin High School, one very influential person that really, I always thought I wanted to be a coach probably like around junior high, but like the more I saw like John Outlaw, my head football coach, like the type of relationships he built with his players, just what he did for them, that really kind of piqued my interest, and didn't really start to understand it more until I got into it. I love the profession. I love coaching. Not only the impact that you can make with the kids that you coach, but being in my role now as an athletic director, I love working with younger coaches. The average age of our staff, minus me, is probably like 25, and I'll be 44 on Monday. But seeing guys like Makona and Justin wanting to put a clinic like this together, Alex coming up here speaking, having an influence to help them, guide them to where they want to be and be successful in the profession is also big to me. Probably the biggest struggle as a coach right now is my daughter will be a sophomore next year, and it's still wearing the coach's hat when I'm at home as dad because I'm still trying to coach her, and she's resisting like my players resist sometimes, and that's a little bit difficult. But I think from my wife would say, she's trying to explain to her, dad just wants the best for you, and that's what we all want as coaches, is the best for what I call our kids, not just our players, but all of them are our kids, whether they're playing football for me or baseball for me, or I'm watching them play volleyball, soccer, any other sport. I view them all as my kids, and these are like my older kids. So that's what I really enjoy about coaching.
I got into coaching for the same reason Coach Simpson did, which was the money. That's what he told me, and anyway, I'm still waiting to figure out where that's coming from. No, I mean, for me, it's a mission field. I truly believe in the deepest heart that one of the best ways to touch a young man is through the sport of football. I just don't think there's any other better vehicle. The most influential people in my lives were football coaches. I come from a line of you know, family members that played all the way up through the NFL level or coached all the way up through the high school level. So I just think that there's no better vehicle still to this day. And so, you know, and in the culture and the where we are today, I think we need really solid. Hats off to all of you. And I hope you share that same, that sowing into young men, what it means. I think what, I can't remember if it was Gallegos or Steele that said, you know, to be a good husband, to be a good father, those are the things that we, you know, we want, how to be honorable men and yet be able to be, you know, good Christian soldiers when we're out there fighting. So for me, it's a mission field. I feel called to do it, and it's what led me to step away from, you know, what was probably a very successful program to, because I felt like it was something that, you know, God called me to do, go someplace else and sow into a new group of, you know, individuals.
So with that, those were all phenomenal answers, but we would like to also open up the floor for any open questions that any of you all may have for the group of panel here.
For Coach Steele, what will you do differently given the 20 years at May, and then stepping into a fresh situation, I would imagine that you'd be thinking like, okay, it's a new chance, fresh canvas. Anything you would do differently at all? What's your perspective going in?
Definitely. like Coach Gago said earlier in his introduction, he probably got handed the reins of the Jonesboro program a little too early. I know I did at May. And so I made a ton of mistakes as a young coach that prayerful that I do not duplicate. We always ask our kids, you know, it's okay to make mistakes, just don't make the same one, right? That's what I'm shooting for here. There's a lot of stuff probably in the last, especially in the last 10 years, that I've really learned that I wasn't near the coach that I thought I was. We played a game in 2008 maybe against Throckmorton and went 5 overtimes. And at the time it was one of the most phenomenal games, definitely one of the most phenomenal games I've ever been a part of. So it's on a YouTube channel that Lehman Saunders set up. And so I went back to watch it because I was like, God, we were so fundamentally sound. We were awful. We didn't block worth a crap. We didn't tackle. Our scheme was bad. I was like, oh, man, I wish I knew then what I know now. So to answer your question, yeah, I think the last 20 years have taught me a lot. And I think I'm going to be starting from a position of strength in Borden County, where when I started at May, I thought I knew a lot, but I didn't know much. So, thank you.
This one is an open question to all of you guys. We're a first-year program and never had six-man before. And I guess I would ask, you know, what advice would you give, you know, what are the most important things to make us competitive in year one or successful in year one?
Okay. I'm all over this one. Okay, when you sit down with that athletic director and he tells you you're going to have a team, make sure you always ask him, have any of these guys ever played football before? I got a team last year. Not a single soul had ever played football in their life. But I would say that, we've had, Coach Kenny and I have had this discussion. One of the most amazing things about taking over, having the opportunity to take a team that has zero football experience, I mean none, and playing a varsity schedule, is how important your junior high program is. If you don't have one, do everything you can to get one. Because I know a lot of y'all are out there, private school or homeschool or some of these others. You cannot have the success, and I never realized how much success that we had when we were at Tribe was predicated on what was sown into our young men when they were in junior high. And I don't know about it at the public school, but for us, that is I can't speak enough to that. And then the other thing that I would say is just blocking and tackling. I mean, if I had to go back and do it all over again, two plays on offense, two schemes on defense, and spend the entire time blocking and tackling. Because, those things just come through reps and lots of them. That's what I would say.
I'm going to echo that as well. Fundamentals. I would probably say scheduling, you don't want to get those kids gunshot where they don't ever want to step on a football field again. So I imagine scheduling is very important for a young group or an inexperienced group.
We're playing first game. We're playing Coach Goldman up there, so you're gonna have to tell me whether that was a mistake or not.
I'm sorry, say again.
First game we're playing Grace Academy. Coach Goldman up there.
You'll be good this year.
One year. I'm a miracle worker, yeah.
Can each of you guys give just a brief overview of how you organize your staff, how the communication looks from coordinator to head coach to other assistants, what that looks like?
That is a good question for me. So I'm going to go back to May because I don't really know for sure who all my staff is at Borden County still. So I was blessed at May in the last 2 to 3 years. We were able to bring back three kids so let me go back a little bit. And we hired a guy named Chad Dale in 2010, I believe. And he became defensive coordinator in 2013. So we coached together for a long time. We coached a lot of kids. Well, in the last 3 years, we were able to bring back three of those kids that we coached to coach with us. So this is different than most places. So this is super beneficial. We had two coaches with the junior high. We had three coaches with the high school. And it's a relatively large staff for six men. The most important thing to me through all that up and down the line, junior high, JV, high school, same verbiage is being used, same communication is being used. You call a defense the same thing. You call an offense the same thing. You call this block the same thing, junior high all the way up, so there's no confusion. So they don't get to high school, and I'm calling a defensive player, I'm calling him a D end, and in junior high that guy was called a safety. That would never happen, but you get my drift. I think that communication up and down the line has got to be seamless so there's no confusion at any point. I also think it's really important at the junior high level, run the same stuff you run at the high school level. Otherwise, you're spinning your wheels. You're never going to get good enough at anything. We've had kids that have played corner in a 2-3 for 6 years. By the time that kid's a senior, he's a really good corner because he's been doing it a long time.
Very good answer. I think, Coach Keeler and I were talking. Coach Keeler's our math teacher, and, he was kind of frustrated with the we're talking about the vertical alignment from junior high math teachers to what he gets. And so I think that's very very close to what Coach said. If you're not on the same page with your middle school staff, moving on forward. I mean, that's going to take time and have some issues with verbiage and the scheme or whatever have you. For us, we're also lucky. I think we have 90 or so kids in high school, so we're able to run obviously the varsity schedule, JV schedule, sometimes a JV2 game here and there. And then we usually have had two junior highs as well. And so a JV we send two, eighth grade we send two, and seventh grade usually gets our least experienced coach, and they kind of, you know, grow together, learn together. So keep it really, really simple for those groups.
On the staffing part, I've been on a staff of 2, 3, 4, up to 6. I think when I first started at Apple Springs, it was myself and Coach Morey. When I started at Emory, it was just myself, and I had a defensive coordinator. To be honest with you, I didn't even know who he was. He got hired by the AD and a little bit intimidated because he played NFL football. But it was a good, really good working relationship. He was my DC all my years there. When I came over here, I pretty much inherited a staff of Coach Jolly, who was here for several years, won a TCAL championship, and a couple other young coaches. Now, honestly, the staff we have now is kind of fell in my lap. It's kind of like a godsend. Coach Simpson, he came on. He sent me an email, cold email, I guess like in the April when he's getting ready to graduate. And not knowing until June, Coach Jolly was leaving, and he had to kind of wait for about a month and a half until he came on. And then Coach Powell responded to a Texas High School Coach Association post. So I poached him from Westbury, and then we poached Coach Sons from Westbury too. I say all that to say this. Our staff, for me, one big thing with staff is loyalty and guys that can work well together. You know, we got our own little group chat. We talk about different things football related, but we all have the same vision for the program and vision for what we want to do for kids. Similar to Coach Steele and Coach Gallegos, we only have middle school and a varsity, but Coach Sines and Coach Powell, and we have one other coach, they coach the middle school, and then they also coach high school as well. Do that for multiple reasons. One, so we get that consistency, and two, so I can pay them more money. Because they are younger guys. Fortunately enough now, though, like Coach Hardison, who's doing the instruction tomorrow, defensive line, he also played in the league. He's the only other coach we have on staff right now, but all four of us are full-time at the school right now. So that's also good on the relationship piece because they see the kids every day, and when we all coach multiple sports. So I say when you're looking at building your staff, those are kind of key things to kind of look at. Our situation is different, and sure, I'm sure he's about to talk about a little bit where he's at in Georgetown.
Well, I'm not going to mention the name of anybody that's helping me because he'll poach them. I'm not worried about Steele and Gallegos. They're too far. My guys aren't going to go that far. But, yeah, I mean, I've always had a smaller number. So if I'm going to speak to the people that have had sort of – I've never had more than most of the time 17 players, right? So it's a pretty small staff. I've got 10 now, 9 last year. You know, what I would tell you that is always that I missed last year that I've always had, and I think it was Coach Steele that said this, is it's having players that sew back into your program within 1 or 2 years after leaving is extremely beneficial. They can speak and reach to players in a way that you just simply can't. And I think the more, you know, obviously I don't have that since this is only our second year to ever play football, but one of the things I did do is I asked some of my old players to come out to our first 2 weeks of practice and run through drills and do things so they could see what it was that we were trying to emulate. And, you know, that part of that is that just part of the culture you're trying to build. This is the standard. This is what we want it to look like. This is how we behave on a football field. This is what we're trying to build. So I would say that element. And the other thing that I'm a little bit different in terms of on the coaching side, I ask of anybody that helps with us, we do what I've termed learner-driven coaching. So what I mean by that is as much as we possibly can, we want to get our leaders on our football team, regardless of age. You know, that could be a freshman, it could be a senior, but the people that are going to be leadership roles, we want them to take ownership of every element of the practice in the game. you know, I got asked, I don't know, a couple of years back when we were in a title game or something, somebody came up and said, you know, you called a great game. I said, I haven't called a play since the third game of the season. Literally, had not called a single play. The reason why is because we had good senior leaders. They called everything on both sides of the ball. That's, to me, the most deadly way as a coach. If you want to really frustrate the heck out of the other team's DC, every time he makes an adjustment, if your guy on the field can make a faster adjustment and snap the ball, blow their mind. They keep thinking you're stealing their signals. I don't have time for that. You know, I got one camera, not three. And so I would say that, you know, the more you can get your on-the-field coaching and the more you can do to get your on-the-field coaching, especially when you're a smaller program, the better off you'll be.
That's easier for you to do. You were homeschooled. Y'all practice all the time. Y'all go to class.
Mr. Weight Room. What kind of team-building exercise do you guys do within your team to get that brotherhood that sometimes gets lacking? A lot of kids out there want to be that star on Madden, and they think they're going to be that guy. I think all of us have coached long enough to know I usually do have one of those guys on that team, and sometimes there can be some jealousy within the team when that guy's scoring all the touchdowns. You know, try to build it up and say, you know, that scoreboard's all of you. It's not just that one guy. But what is it that you do to kind of build that brotherhood or that team camaraderie to try to sow that distension and get it out of there?
So I'll go ahead and take that one. Whether it was here or at Emory, I would say a lot of the players, guys who play for me, would say like brotherhood was really key for them. And it's different things that we do. We have a set of core values that we follow that I used there and I took with here as well. But it's so like what I like to do early in the season before we start playing games, we'll go on a retreat. And we go on that retreat maybe two nights or one night, just depends on where we're going and what we're doing. Before we get there, I'll have each player kind of sit down and write like an essay. And they'll talk about, like, why they're playing football, you know, what their fears are, you know, what their goals are. And they got to get up in front of everybody and pretty much give their testimony to the team of, like, their football experience. And that weekend in general just kind of brings them together a little bit. Follow that up a little bit on the bye week, what we'll do. We'll take them over and we'll just go bowling. Over at the main event, we'll have a bowling night. We'll have team dinners. Anything that gets them to spend time together outside of football. And this is probably not a good thing, I don't advise this, we don't really monitor the locker room too much. Like, that's their space. Y'all have fun, y'all do y'all's thing in there, but if it's not organized, it's also organic things that they do too. Like, so on Thursdays, we have morning practice. Multiple reasons. These guys are coaching middle school football. We're both administrators of volleyball games, but the guys, they'll go on Thursday afternoon, they'll go out to eat, and they'll come back at the volleyball game and support the volleyball team. And that's what they're doing on their own time. So I think it's whatever you can think of that's going to get them to spend time together, just like a family, that's going to buy into that brotherhood piece. And it kind of separates the division of, okay, these freshmen, they're not part of our team. Because unlike College Station, no offense to Coach Pryor, but like our freshmen got to be on varsity, you know. So our seniors tend to take those freshmen under their wings, though. Because the freshmen, they'll come in kind of shy and timid, but once normally when they come out of that retreat, it's a team because they've done things in the cabin. They've hung out. They've had meals together. The last couple of retreats we went to, we had a scrimmage on the back end. We went to Veritas. But we used to go to a camp, an Alvin victory camp, and we would dog them. I mean, it'd be hard stuff that they had to go through for like 2-3 days. And you go through that type of stuff, like running through sand pits together, waking up at 6:30, going on a run. You tend to bond with the people you spend time with. And it's also good for our coaching staff because, again, we let them have their time together, but we also have our planning meetings and we talk and we communicate, and that's our time to kind of get together as a staff too. So as much time as you can get to them to spend together outside of football, the closer they'll be, in my opinion.
Some things – you know, you mentioned, you know, it's, the egos, I guess. We recognize a lot of effort and hustle plays. You know, those are the ones that we really point out in film session and stuff. And, you know, of course, the running backs and quarterbacks, they get pointed out enough. But, you know, any linemen or lead blocks that we see or you know, any turnover plays that are caused from a hustle or effort play, those ones we really, really, really push and film and get excited about. And something else we started doing a few years ago is at the end of practice, we take turns and go around, and one kid every day has to say something positive about the team or a certain individual from that day, whether it be a practice or something from the day they saw maybe in the hallway, you know, helping something or someone being courteous. So those are some of the things we push. And then we obviously have a team meal every week, and the varsity kids have their own, and they'll take turns hosting one. And if they need help hosting, excuse me, there's other folks or coaches that will step up and help them host, whether it be at the church or they're on campus.
Not a whole lot to add to this. We do a lot of trust falls. Just kidding, we don't. So really, I mean, obviously we do a lot. I've never done the retreat. That's an interesting idea. But all the stuff that Coach Gallegos talked about, we do. One other thing we do to we definitely point out what block keyed the touchdown in film. We don't talk so much about who scored the touchdown. We talk about the block that allowed the touchdown to happen. And then we do passing routes in practice, and we run for drops. So, and a lot of times your freshmen are the kids that are dropping the ball. And I've had groups over the years like, can we split it up JV and varsity? Right? Then the varsity kids won't have to run as much because they're going to catch the ball more often. And I said, no, we're one team. I mean, I don't know, some of y'all probably don't have JVs, but Coach Gallegos can attest to this. How many times at some point in the season you had to pull a JV kid up and he had to start? I had to take my JV center and he had to start in a state championship game. He was not ready for that. I promise you. But it happens. And you're one team. You can't just rely on the one kid or the two kids and expect to get very far. So at the end of that pad, those passing routes, we all run the same amount. Whether you didn't drop a pass or whether you dropped all the passes, we all run the same amount. One team. And that's really the only thing I've got to add to what y'all have already said. So.
And one quick thing, too, we forget, too, is you know, there can be poor leadership. You know, the wrong guys can have the leadership. So I think it's important as coaches and adults is to empower. Because, you know, being a leader is not – it's easy to say, but a lot of time kids don't exactly know how to do that, you know. And so I think it's important as coaches to recognize the guys that need to be the leaders and help them and empower them. You know, to kind of step up and whether it be through example or, you know, sit down with them, go through some of the leadership. There's plenty of books out there, a lot of things that you can resource to help those guys be a little more vocal and help the team go in the right direction as opposed to the wrong direction.
The only thing I would add to that is I spend a lot of time with our younger guy, it's not younger, just anybody that's not one of our ones. If you're a two and when you're playing as small as we are, you're the scout team. Spend a lot of time explaining to the young men how important that is, you know, and what your role is and how important your role is and to take pride in your role as a scout player. And I, every year, you know, I usually have a junior or a senior who's still on a scout because the best six are going to play, right? And that's the standard you set. You know, the standard's not going to change. But I'm always impressed by the young men that step up and say, you know what, I'm going to make this the best scout. And the success you have is going to come out of how well you can emulate your opponent and how serious those guys take that role. And when you get a guy that can, or a couple of guys that can take that lead role, it'll make you better. And it also brings, the question was, how do you help bring the guy down that's kind of, watch him just see how much somebody who's taking a role in scout is, and point that out in practice. Like, look, this guy understands this is what this is all about. He's making you better by doing this. And so, you know, every opportunity, like Coach said, on when somebody's scoring, on the blocking, that's all we focus on. And nobody ever cared about who scored it. I'm like, I mean, I always just say even old people like me could score with that kind of blocking. You know, I mean, that's, you know, the point is, you know, to make sure that everybody understands it's a team effort.
So it's an open question to all of you for your schools. And what's your policy, like how much of an open door do you have with your parents to come in and talk to the coaches, head coaches, athletic directors? And I'm wondering how you handle parents.
Yeah, he said it. I'll start it off. That's what's great about an athletic director. I think athletic directors are to be with parents. I mean, part of what I try to instill in the young men that they're men. I call them that. I don't call them boys. They are young men. They can do adult things, make bad habits and good habits. We want to congratulate good habits. And part of that is when you step on a varsity football field, whether from freshman on, if your equipment's not there, that's a you problem. That's not a mama problem. That's not a daddy problem. If you didn't get to practice on time, I don't care if you can't drive. That's still a you problem. I mean, what? You got four other brothers that can drive cars. Why didn't they come pick you up? Well, I didn't think about it. You can't communicate? I grew up without a phone. I could still get to practice on time. Don't give me excuses. And so I hold each of the players accountable. And I make sure at the beginning of the year I send a letter out to all the parents and I say, look, if you want to communicate with me, I'm always there, but you can't speak to me on the day of, or it always has to be a scheduled a day later. And I've been doing this a long time, and I've never had this. I think one time have I ever had a parent come talk to me, and I said I would prefer to work through the issue with your son. And if you feel like we need to be present, then by and large most parents appreciate that. And so I try to, if it's something that has to do, again, I'm new to the private school arena, but seemed to work last year. My athletic director takes care of the school, whatever that school stuff is, that has to take care of. And so, so I kind of work through the athletic director. That's my take on parents.
Parents, for me, to be honest with you, I think just because of how my natural persona is, they don't really come to me. And I get this a lot because I had a role of dean of students for a couple of years. Like, I'm pretty, focused all the time in my facial expressions. So I think that intimidates them a little bit, where they just don't want to come talk to me about different things. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, it's not normally anything they need to come talk to me about. We have parents who come watch our practices, and the same Coach Adams you're going to see on Tuesday yelling at Johnny is going to be the same Coach Adams going to yell at Johnny on Friday night if he's not doing something right. And they see that and they appreciate what we're trying to do for them because they can come see a mess up on Tuesday. So I still have an open door policy. I'll talk to them if they communicate about an issue that doesn't relate necessarily to something the kid can't talk about themselves. So, like, if they're struggling with something in school, I'll talk to them about it. If they're struggling with something socially, and I have had parents come to me, talk to me about those type of things, but, like, they're not coming to ask me why Johnny didn't play the fourth quarter because I pulled him because he had an attitude. That's just not what we're going to do. But it also depends on what type of standard, like he said, that you set up to begin with, to let them know, like, you've handed over your kid during this time, we're going to take care of them. And you have to show them that you're going to take care of them, where you don't have those issues where they want to come talk to you when things don't go the way maybe they want them to go. Let the kid struggle, let them fail. And then you help them through that failure by supporting them. Just on that type of note, like, same thing with my daughter. She does cheer and she does track. And I tell her, like, I'm the athletic director, but I'm not going to talk to your cheer coach about why you're upset with cheer. You need to go talk to the coach while you're upset with cheer. I think, like you said, just have the kids advocate more and kind of take the parent out of the situation. And know, too, like, it depends on your coaching staff. We'll have a parent meeting with all the parents about athletics at times, and we'll tell them, unless your child is, like, physically or emotionally or mentally attacked by one of the coaches, we really don't have anything to talk about. But if something like that does happen, yes, please let me know and we can discuss. So it's also just kind of keeping the eyes on your coaches and being aware of how you coach yourself.
I think Coach hit a lot of those. I think trust is a big deal. The expectations are a big deal, and all those need to be communicated. I've been fortunate that I've been at the place I have been for so long, so that certainly helps. And Jonesboro is probably unique that in especially the boys' side, I don't have very many parent conferences. It's just, not necessarily that it's me, but I think our the boys' side. Now, girls' parents, I've had plenty of those, it seems like. That's most of the time what I spend my time with when it comes to that is the girls' side. But our boys' side is really good. And, again, that's most of my time is spent with them as the football coach. And trust, communication, those are two huge deals. And sometimes, as the athletic director or the head coach with experience, you need to make sure you help your young coaches because they're, especially the 20-year-old guys that are accustomed to being, on this thing a lot, which it's a great tool now, but they're sometimes not very good communicators. And so those are things that, as the older guy, you need to help them with, be better at. And that'll keep them, the parents, away some. In a lot of situations, you can head off something before it even turns into something. We don't talk about playing time. That's one thing we won't talk about, and I think that's a pretty standard, response. If a parent wants to talk, we're not going to talk that day. We can talk tomorrow or the next day or whenever. We can schedule a common meeting time. Again, a lot of the issues can be taken care of before they become an issue.
Not a whole lot to add to that, except the trust and stuff that Coach Gagos was talking about, I had that built up over 20 years in May. I've got to restart that in Borden County. It makes me wonder if I'm doing the right thing. No, I'm just kidding. But one of the things that we do is we set up a group meet with the kids and the parents on it, not just the kids. And y'all know that you tell kids one thing, it never gets home to the parents the way you said it. So it's a communication tool anything I would tell the kids, I'm going to tell the parents the same thing on that group meet. So that's just so we don't have communication issues about what time we're leaving and little things like that for whatever reason flies all over parents. What time practice is going to be over this week? I send out a weekly schedule. That way we don't have that type of stuff going on. Not going to talk about playing time. I don't mind if you come talk to me. We're not going to talk about why I ran what play in the third quarter. We're not going to talk about why we were in that defense. None of that. We're not going to talk about any other kid. We're going to talk about your kid. That's it. And if you want to know why he's not playing, I'm going to be 100% honest with you, and you won't like that. So if you ask that question, then I'm going to tell you it's because he practices like doo-doo. He didn't put out any effort. And you want to fix that, and then you can get some playing time. I also think, like Coach Adams, I look mad all the time, even though I'm really not. And so I don't look like I'm a person you can come approach. And I think you should all cultivate that look. Because it will save you a lot of trouble. Because parents will be like, I'm just not going to talk to him today. He doesn't look like he's in a good mood. If it's a track day, I'm really not in a good mood. So, anyway.
Like Coach said, one thing to add on the communication piece that will take a lot of headaches away from you, and this is what I had to learn in private school, starting at Emory. I send out a weekly email. So, like on Sunday, even in football season, the schedule doesn't change, but they act like the schedule is going to change. So it's always going to be the same, but I send out the email anyway to cut off any type of headaches that may come my way. And I will still have the parent the emails asking, when did they get out of practice on Wednesday? It's the same time, but I send the email anyway just to help myself. That way I don't have to answer those questions quite as much. And if it's anything that the kids need to know immediately, we have a group meet too. They get that information. If it's something the parents need to know immediately, then I'll just email them and let them know what's going on. But as much communication ahead of time as possible, the better.
Got any other additional questions?
Gabby, we're recording this, right? I've had this discussion. I think most of the people in the room that have been coaching for a while, and I don't know, but, and I've seen it in a real big shift in the sense that I was in a very rural area that became a more urban area, right? And over that that, you know, 17, 18-year period that I was coaching in that area, the athletes have certain, well, a couple of things. Time, let me start with positives. I used to spend a lot of time on film, right? You know, film never lies, all that kind of stuff. I now feed my guys film in anything that's under 90 seconds. We film every practice. I'm all about reps, less talk. I don't have as much time with him, unlike what he thinks that we're homeschooled. I get him actually fewer hours a week. They get him in the gym at 6 a.m. What is all? Give me a break. Whatever. We would have 6 hours a week and then a game. And in that 6 hours, I'm not spending my time on, you know, I'm going to spend my time trying to get as much as I can. Except, but, you know, so what I would tell you is that what's amazing about the kids now is that 90 seconds, they consume it so much better than the 30 minutes of sitting down film time that we used to have. But if you try to force feed 30 minutes down their throats, you're going to get nothing. So I've had to adapt the way I do film. That's just one example. One of the other things that I found is that, you know, they are not building your culture. And they, the more time you can force them to be together, the better. They don't seem to want to do that as much. So the more that you can sort of create opportunities for them in ways within your school environment, whatever, I think that that brotherhood, that fellowship is harder now than it used to be. And the type of athlete, too, there seems to be, you know, the term is grit, I guess, in the old word, but they're not as accustomed to having to overcome obstacles as the, you know, they're just not as tough. I mean, I'll be flat out say it. But that's incumbent upon us, to me, is to create an environment that is, again, the standard should never change. The athlete might coming into the program, but the standard shouldn't. So we're going to ask a lot more, and sometimes, and I'll be flat out, we've lost a lot of players through the year. More players, I believe, have left our programs because they believe the standard is too difficult. And so I've seen through the years, you know, where we've got people that do not, and even where I am now, we've lost players because I believe I don't know because I don't do an exit interview, but because of the actual physicality standard that I think he's required to play this sport and play it right. And, you know, that's just one that I'm not coming off of, and I don't know, but I'd love to hear what some of these other guys, if they have to face that where they are. But I've seen that over the last 20 years. It's just been, that's becoming more difficult.
I think your culture is going to be your culture. It's kind of like you said, the same thing, the standard. So I wouldn't necessarily say society's changed. It's like the older you get, the more you need to try to understand the teenage mind, the psychological part of it, because they're getting pulled in a lot of different directions that we didn't have to worry about. And turning 44, I'm starting to feel older a little bit. Just, I won't say older, probably wiser to recognize those type of things that, you know, back 20 years ago, like, you may have a girlfriend, but you got a girlfriend, but you, like, football's still number one priority. Where now, girlfriend's number one priority, and football may be second. Or they may want a job so they can go buy a car, and they don't want to go to summer workout. So it's understanding how to make those things all kind of mix together to still get what you need out of them on the football side of things and not dropping your standard in the same process. Another thing I've said probably the last couple of years, if I ever have time, I want to do research on. I think COVID has changed society big time, because everyone, lazy's not the word. Everything became more convenient being at home. You didn't see a whole lot of kids who wanted to work out during COVID on their own time. Even watching film, those types of things, like they have huddle at the access of their hand, and they still won't watch huddle. It depends on what they want to focus their time and efforts on. If they want to spend it on Call of Duty, that's what they're going to do. If they want to spend it with a girlfriend, that's what they're going to do. Even parents, to a certain degree, especially being in a private school like we're at, academically, like, parents are, they want them to spend a lot of time to get in the type of schools they want them to get into. And sometimes that if they don't have good time management, that's going to pull away from the football aspect of it. So we preach to them, like, our kids have a study hall every day. Like, No, use your study hall. Don't be in there looking at YouTube and TikTok and everything else. Use your study hall for schoolwork and also to watch huddle. So when you get to football practice, we can focus on football. But I think one way you can kind of, what we've done to a certain aspect, kind of same thing he's talking about with huddle. I'm just like, yo, I get on there and I look at how much huddle they look at. So if they're not looking at very much huddle, guess what we got to do? We got to lose more time looking at team film together. On Tuesdays, instead of, we used to send out a scout report on Monday evening and expect them to look at it. PDF, digital copy, they will still not look at. So Tuesdays, we go all the way through the scouting report before we go to our Tuesday practice to make sure they know exactly what we're talking about when we hit the field. So you have to make changes with yourself and your coaching style to counteract the changes in society to get what you need to make them successful.
I think one that hit home for me was a few years ago. I saw a Frank Martin quote. I don't know if you guys know him, but he's a pretty fiery basketball coach, I think K-State, South Carolina. But essentially what he said, and you can find it if you search it, but Cliff Note is pretty much that kids have not changed. The adults have. And their expectations for kids have. And so kids are going to do what you allow them to do. You know, again, he reemphasized kids haven't changed. We have. As adults, and I think I agree with him.
It's literally what I was going to say. What a jerk. The only thing I've noticed different on the kids is that for whatever reason, or maybe it was just me, but this age group of people had a lot more school spirit. And I know that sounds like a little cheerleader thing, but I mean, they actually loved and cared about their school. I don't feel like kids do that anymore. They don't, it's just where they play. I think that's changed, but I've said it, my kids are different today than they were 20 years ago, and they're not. I mean, they have more things they can do. We have more distractions today than they did 20 years ago, but they're still kids and still motivated by the same thing. I agree with Coach Gallegos. It's the adults that are different now.
Yeah, I mean, all my kids, almost every one of my guys, well, I'm speaking more from my experience at Tribe, worked. They're rural kids, and they all worked. I mean, so, but if you build your culture right, they're in the gym in the summer at 11, they meet up at 11:30 at night. Best thing we ever did was we just put a shed in the middle of a field, roll up doors, and said, you have access to it 24/7. Bought the insurance and let them have it. No air conditioning, no nothing. And they're there. You know, I'd ask my son. At the time, I had my sons were playing through it at that time. And, yeah, they'll meet there at 1 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, if they're committed and they're buying in, they'll make the time. You just got to give them the ability to fit that schedule because, yeah, they were all – our practices had to move to different times to accommodate work schedules for on ranches, farms. Again, a little bit different, obviously, than in city. But I think if you give them, you know, ask them, what do you need? That's how I came up with we called it the Shred Shed. They named it that. And, I mean, it was just somebody donated a $3,000 metal building. We put it on top of, you know, we smashed down some dirt or caliche and threw mats down and had a bunch of weights put in there, and next thing you know, they're lifting every night, you know, midnight to 1 a.m., whatever.
Our challenge is a little bit different. It's not necessarily work. It's vacation during the summer. I don't like it, but I understand it. The reason why we don't really, I guess the best way to put it, like put too much pressure on them to not take vacations, we want them to take them at certain times, is because our kids literally go from season to season to season without a break. They get a two-week break. Well, they get Thanksgiving, they get 2 weeks during the winter break, Christmas break, and they get spring break. But all our kids that play football, they're playing a sport every other season. So they're pretty worn out by the time they get to the end of school. And honestly, like, we can't tell a parent, like, don't take a vacation. We want them mentally fresh. because we'll get more out of them. So, like, when Coach Simpson was talking about his assessments, he knows when they're going to be on break. He knows, like, when they've been pushing a lot. So we have to kind of tweak the workouts to fit what they're doing. Now, on the work part, like, when I first got here, the guys wanted to work out at 9 o'clock in the morning. They wanted to go 9 to 11. Well, we moved it to 5 to 7 because we have more guys who want to work now. They get off in the afternoon, and then they can make the afternoon workouts. And we kind of think of the 5 to 7. We like the 5 to 7, and what we'll do even when we hit camp, we'll go 7 to 9 because we want to practice closer to when we play. Like, I don't personally like the morning workouts. Like, people who like, well, yeah, we'll do our two-a-days and we'll do our morning workout 6 to 8. Well, if you think about it, your body's not going to respond to the stimulus that is going to get 7 to 9 if you don't work out to that time. Now, once we start practicing, of course, we're going after school, but, like, we kind of counteract a couple different things by going 7 to 9, keep them up here, we get them tired, and even during the summertime, when we start in August, they're so tired, they're going to go home, they're going to eat, and they're going to go to sleep. And their parents like that. And they're going to be sore in the morning, and they're going to get up, and they're going to do it all the next day. So I threw a couple different things in there, not just the specific question you had. But the kids will make time for what they want to do. And when they don't, you kind of have to work around it as best you can to still get them prepared for the season.
We've got two, Monday through Thursday, we have two workout periods. In the summer, so eight to 10:30 or so are girls, and then our junior high boys and our younger high school kids that don't drive yet, they usually work out in the morning Monday through Thursday, and then our work.
I have in the past run two like that, run two workout times. One of them, boys are 30 miles away, and so we're going to give those parents a chance to what we're going to have to do up there. It's different than in May where all the kids were right there around the town, so.
So we'll circle back. Talk about week of football, I guess, preparing up until Friday. Are some of you that play on some programs, they won't practice on Monday. Some will just do film and then have a Tuesday through Thursday practice. Talk about what that looks like for you all leading up to Fridays.
We're pretty regimented about everything that we do, I'm sure. You know, we send out we break down Saturday, the film that we did from Friday night, and that goes out to the players. Sunday, we send out, you know, the projected sort of game plan for whatever you want to say for the coming week. You know, look at who we're playing and what their sets are like. Monday, again, we have 2-hour practices on Monday, 2-hour on Tuesday, and 2-hour on Thursday. We usually do about an hour and a half on Thursday. We don't have Wednesday practices. And the reason for that is we have the academics. So the academics and, you know, we want to get the most. And so out of practices on those 2 hours, we're going to spend the predominant amount of our time on special teams and defense. We probably, just because of the way we are, we're going to spend more on what you're doing, less on what we do, because we already know what we do. What we'll also do is we'll send out, what we believe is going to be for that week. So on Monday, we'll go through it. We film everything, what looked like it worked or didn't work. We'll adjust on Tuesday. Same thing again on Tuesday. Thursday is more of a walkthrough, you know, that kind of thing. And Friday, by the way, we control everything they do on game day, everything. From the moment they leave the class, what they're eating, what they're drinking, when they're eating. Like, I don't trust mom to feed them the right dinner or them to get the right food. So whatever game day is, they're together. From the moment they leave class until the game's over at 10 o'clock at night. And so that way we also make sure that, they're kind of in the right mind.
It's kind of changed over the years. When I was at Emory there for 9 years, if you don't know about Emory, it's a Jewish school. So they either played on Thursday or Saturday. And once I came to Allen, I loved it because it was always going to be on Friday unless it's something different. Which kind of changed. Like at Emory, the weeks were just long. And we had to wait to play on Saturday night. So coming here, what I wanted to do was on Monday, let's go back to the weekend. After we play on Friday, we don't bring them in on Saturday. They need a rest day. I feel like our coaching staff needs time with their families, and that's what I really emphasize with them. But also tell the coaches, like, you're going to go somewhere at some point in time where you're going to work on Saturday. So enjoy it now, because it's not going to be that way everywhere else. But they still have responsibilities on the weekend. Like the coordinators, they have to give me their scouting report information for special teams and defense by like 6 o'clock on Sunday. And then I'll work Sunday through Monday afternoon putting together the scouting report. Because Simpson and I will normally talk anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour about the defensive game plan. Coach Powell and I will talk on the phone on that Sunday maybe for like 15, 20 minutes about special teams. And then on Monday when they come in, we have afternoon practice. They'll do their maintenance lifts, conditioning type deals, and then we'll watch the game film from Friday. And then we'll try to get them out of here by 6 o'clock, which is early, the early day on Monday. We get them out of here at 6 so they can go home and do homework. But then we also stay, and that's when we have our weekly coaches meeting for anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half, hopefully, going over the game plan for the week. We come back on Tuesday. Tuesday is normally a shells day because we're doing a whole lot of teaching. We'll meet before we go out. Coach Simpson will go over the defensive game plan on the board. We'll go through the full scouting report PDF, and then we'll go out. And then on that practice is normally 4:30 to 6:30. Same 4:30 to 6:30 on Wednesday, but it's full pads. In our practice schedule, we're going to hit special teams every single day. I know some people break it down where they'll do offense one day, defense one day, and then they'll spend Thursday on specials. Now, we're going to hit special teams probably two. We have two segments normally of special teams every day. Wednesday is our hard work day. And then Thursday, what we actually do, like I said, because we have coaches who coach middle school, but the kids also like it, we'll go 6:30 to 7:30 on Thursday morning for our walkthrough. And the reason we do that is they like it because they get more recovery time before we play on Friday. So in that walkthrough, it's real light. We may do, you know, situations. We may do up and down against air on offense. Coach Simpson will go over the defensive game plan one more time, and then we'll go through all our special teams and sub type things. That Thursday practice isn't always the same. And then on Friday, just like Coach said, once school's over, they're with us until the game is over. So we'll pep rally, we'll go eat somewhere locally, something light, and then we'll get them back here. It was so hot last year, we didn't really do this very much. What we like to do after a pep rally, we take them out right after the pep rally, and we go through our routes then. Like, so just to get loose a little bit and get going a little bit, get a little bit of sweat before we go eat, and then come back, and then we're ready to go. So that's what our typical week looks like right now.
Junior high has first period athletics, so those guys come in on the bus. Again, we're kind of the same way. A lot of our kids live 20-25 minutes away, and they commute in on the bus or get dropped off. So those guys usually start about 7:35, 7:40 and go through first period. And then Wednesdays we do bring those guys after school. A lot of them go to church Wednesday night, and so they just stay there and head to church then. Our high school is half shell all week after August, after 2 days. Once season begins week one, Monday we don't practice on Saturdays. The coaches come in, review the game film, start kind of game planning, see what we need to fix and work on that week. Monday we do review the Friday night film on Monday after school, and Tuesday's big defensive day, individuals. Scout offense. Wednesday, offensive day, scout D. Thursday, varsity special teams during the period. And then after school, they have defensive recognition, play polish. And obviously, that's game day for junior high and JV for us.
I'm not sure how I'm going to work it in Borden County, but in May, we brought the kids in Saturday morning, watch film. Not to watch the good plays, to watch the bad ones. What needs to be fixed, not to slap them on the back and say great job, and then from there, coaches break down film. Coaches come back Sunday night, and we do the game plan together Sunday night, and that way on Monday we're ready. So on Monday we have what we call walkthroughs. It's really not a walkthrough. It's the scouting report on the field with positions. Numbers on the offense, numbers on the defense, names, if we have them, what their strengths and weaknesses are, so on and so forth. And we go through that, and it takes a little while to do that. And after that, we get into our practice. So we're going to go offense that day. We probably won't go defense that day, but we'll go offense because all the plays that I put in that week, we're going to run them on Monday. We're going to run them on Tuesday. We're going to run them on Wednesday. And if by Wednesday that don't work, then it's out. It's out. We're not going to run it on Friday night if we can't make it work against our scout team. That don't make no sense. And so on Thursday, every play that's in gets run one more time. Just helmets, shorts, tops, no pads, nothing, just every play, run it one more time. And then, of course, we tried to do that during the period because that's junior high JV day as well. So, and in May, we were fortunate enough to have enough coaches that we could bring our junior high back on Monday and Tuesday after school. I don't think the period's enough time for junior high football, for football in general. I don't think it's enough time. So we brought them back on Monday and Tuesday. I'm not sure how I'm going to work it in Borden County with kids. A lot of them living so far off, so we'll have to see. I used to do a ton of tackling. My first year in May, we did a tackling drill every day, mainly because they weren't very good tacklers. As time has gone on, we do some tackling drills early in the year, but by and large, unless there's something that we see on film that we have got to get fixed, we don't. And then live, we don't take them to the ground. At times over the years, I would get frustrated with our blocking back when you could cut block, and I'd go live cut blocks, which is pretty risky. There's no point in doing it now because we rarely get a chance to cut anybody. So we don't have a ton of contact. And when we do, it's not going to the ground.
Same here. We block every day. We tackle every day in some form or fashion. And Coach Betts is special teams every day as well. But we don't. It's early whistle. A team, it's early whistle. And individuals, we don't go to the ground anymore. Early stuff now too.
Early in the season, we'll do a good amount of tackling. We may have some type of tackling drill, not necessarily high-impact tackling, just form stuff every day that we can warm up with, angle tackling, like I said, form tackling. If we're going to do any tackling at all, it's going to happen on Tuesday of any type of, like, high-impact, like, take them to the ground type things. But one thing I didn't mention, a little bit different, like when I came here, they weren't used to having, like, position coaches. And it was kind of, I won't say frowned upon, but, like, people kind of look like, you got, like, five coaches and you got, like, nine players. Like, you almost have as many coaches as players, but kind of related to tackling, I feel like you need to specialize specifically positions so they get good at those positions. So we spend a lot of time in individual. And then during that individual time, like, Coach Simpson, he may not have a tackling segment per day for the whole defense, but I'm able to work in tackling with my linebackers just on dummies just so we can work on angles, pursuits and things like that. So we're working on the form, we're working on the angles, but we don't have to be high impact and hitting another body, taking them to the ground.
Yeah, we're shells. We block, quick whistle. We don't take to the ground unless, you know, if there was some reason the week before. I think twice in the last 10 years have I said we're going to act like this is a, you know, a spring practice, and that's only because there's just not. Everybody's getting lazy, right? So it's almost like not punishment, but it's, you know, hey, we got to. If we're not going to tackle in the game, well, we better start practicing again how to tackle, and that usually hits at home. But yeah, we try not to. It's too risk of injuries too high.
To add to that, short story. My second year here, starting quarterback. He also played a little bit of defense, defensive back. So we're in the first round of the playoffs, and we're doing tackling drills, pretty much like one-on-ones, take to the ground. Well, he breaks a bone in his foot. And after that point, I'm like, yeah, no, like, that's not the wisest thing to do to continue to tackle that late in the season. Fortunately enough, he came back by the state semifinal game, but he wasn't quite the same. So, like, especially with my quarterbacks, I'm very protective of them and what they do contact-wise and in practice because I normally only have one. So if I lose him, we're probably in trouble. So as far as the contact thing, like, I wouldn't recommend doing a whole lot if you can get away with it as the season progresses.
Last question, and then we'll close this thing out. For each and every one of you, what's a piece of advice that you'd give, whether it's like young coaches, current coaches, assistant coaches, head coaches, what is one piece of advice that you would give them?
Dang. I'm going to say make sure the kids are your focus, not your win-loss record, not how you look. Just make sure the kids are the focus of everything you do. And then from an X's and O's standpoint, real quick, as you're watching film on your opponent and you see this play that just torches them, I don't mean for this to sound offensive, but don't give your opponent too much credit that they automatically got that fixed. I know in years past I'm like, oh, well, that play's not going to work. They're going to get that fixed. Sometimes that play still works. You should give it a try.
I think that and probably this advice and applies to anything you're doing is just stay humble and keep working hard. Don't ever be too prideful to reach out to anyone in here or anyone else that's not here and ask for some advice or help or guidance on anything from scheme to how to approach a problem or any of those things. I think just continue to try to grow every year, every season.
Probably got three quick things to kind of talk about and that kind of falls into our core values as a program. For me, number one, love God. Because if you don't love God and give him all the praise and glory, you won't be successful in anything you do. Number two, love your family. Be a good husband. Be a good father. Be responsible to your family. Those two things, for me, I want to say transform my life. As I read, it's a great book. It's called Faith, Family, and God, I think something like that, by Bobby Bowden. It's a great book to read if you haven't read that book before. And it kind of, I don't say changed my perspective on things, but it had me focus on things a little bit more. Still along the lines of love your coaching staff. Show them that you care for them. Because, some places they go, they may not get the same type of respect in the room that you can give them. It goes a long way. Like, some people don't understand this. Like, my coaches on swag day, they get excited, because I take care of my coaches. I try to show them, you spend time on here. I know you're not getting much of a stipend. I'm going to give you as much gear as I can possibly give you to represent our school. Love the kids that you coach. Show them that you care for them. And tell them you care for them. Tell them you love them. Because sometimes they don't hear that enough. They hear you yelling and screaming, but at the end of the day, they're like you need to say, hey, I love you guys. I can kind of feel sometimes when they need that, and it kind of draws them back in when I've been getting onto them a while and things have been kind of tense. And things may not be going well, reassure them that you love them and understand the reason why that you're doing what you do. On the X's and O's part, continue to grow and develop. Being at this coaching clinic, that's great. Like myself, Coach Simpson, we send stuff to each other all the time on Twitter that we find. Anything that can help you, read a book that's going to help you. And then the last thing, on the field itself, be very, very proficient in your fundamentals. You can have the greatest scheme that you can draw up on that board, and it looks good. Oh, man, we're going to run this new offense. And then you go to implement it, and it's trash. Trust me. But if you're good fundamentally, find the right system, like Coach Edelbrock said, that works for your kids. Because what he runs at his place, not necessarily I can run at my place. Like a lot of you guys are running tight offense, and Jay, man, I look at it like, man, I wish we could run that. But we got guys who weigh like 150. We don't have linemen, so we got to do something a little bit different. But those are the things I would say, the advice I would give to any coach, whether you be young, older, been in the game for 20 years or 2 years.
Yeah, I would echo. I mean, I think your athletes, like anything else, like know if you love and care about them. And the people that are in your program, I mean, you're the head of the program. They know, and you can't fake it. And so every way in which way you can, appreciate the folks that got you where you are. And I think, I can't remember what was said somewhere today, but, I think Coach said when he put the name on the lockers, all the name tags, make sure everybody understands you're part of a bigger plan. You're just one of the pieces in something and you want to continue to maintain that continuity throughout. And so if you've built a culture of And I'm not just saying X's and O's success or wins and losses success, but you've built a program that people want to be a part of. And I think probably one of the greatest things that ever happened, we had a kid, seventh grade all the way up to the senior year. He got one start, seventh grade through senior year. I think he probably got a few more in middle, you know, he played more in middle school. But he wasn't a player. And you would have to ask him, I asked him, why? You know, when he graduated, like, why? He said, because I just loved the fact that, you know, I was a part of something that appreciated me for who I was. I wasn't the greatest athlete. I wasn't the greatest, but I had a role, and my role was to help others become better. And that's, if you have that in your culture, I think that more than anything else is what you want to do. It's because the wins and losses will take care of themselves. On the coaching front, so that just comes from love, and I believe that's, you know, the Christian ethos. One of the best advice that I got, and I started doing this a few years back, put it in your drills. If you don't like what you see in the film, put it in your drills. I mean, it's so simple. Literally, if you're playing a team that's running, you know, some kind of T and they're cutting the ends, then you spend all week learning how to defend the cut. I know you did it back in August, but you're playing a team that's all they're going to do is cut your ends all week long on Friday night. Spend a good hour at least against the cut, because that's what they're going to see on Friday night. I mean, you know, and so we'll, you know, put more things in our drills. We see what they're doing. We're going to put that in our drills during the week in preparation of what they're going to see on. Ever since we did that, I think that's one of the best advice we ever got was, you know, because these kids, they don't see it the way you do as a coach. They just got to put it out there for them in a drill format.
Let's give them a big round of applause. So I know we went over quite a bit. That concludes our first day. Tomorrow we will start at 10 o'clock. We do have a coach's social tonight from basically 7 o'clock to whenever.